Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since the colour yellow. And you're listening to the Therapy Suite. Right here on UK Health Radio, number one talk health radio. This week I speak to Emily, who runs a business going into schools and speak to teenage girls. She finds out why teenage girls are struggling with confidence and what we can do about it. Welcome to the show, Emily. How are you doing?
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. I'm really good, thank you.
Fantastic, fantastic. Emily, I think it would be great for us to hear a bit about your background. And I know you're an actress as well. And it would be brilliant to find out how you transitioned over. And you can even begin before that, let's say from 18 or 21, what you were doing and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it is a roller coaster of a journey, that is for sure. And like one thing that I really love to share with the young people that I work with is that, you know, you might think you know what you want, you might think you know what direction you're going in, but actually, if you are open and you say yes to opportunities, like you just never know quite what will happen. And that's the exciting part about life, in my opinion. So when I was a teenager, I was pretty good at school, quite academic, did all the clubs, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And thankfully, I had a drama teacher called Andrew Harris, who was just brilliant and so supportive, and asked me one day, you know, have you ever thought about being an actress? And initially, I really took a step back and did a bit of a nervous laugh because no, I hadn't, because I never thought that something like that could ever be possible for someone like me, whatever that meant at that time. You know, I didn't know anyone who was an actress. My parents definitely weren't from the theater. So I just didn't think that was a route that was possible. But because of him, and because he just put that little seed of something in the air, I clung on to that because I didn't know what I wanted to be. And he believed in me, saw something in me, which allowed me to believe in myself just that bit, that actually that could be a possibility for me. So when I was choosing my options and A-levels, it was all focused towards performing. And he was incredible because he helped me find work experience. He helped me find an internship and really gave me these. He was the one person that was able to give me an insight into what this industry and career could be. And so I ended up going to the States and interning at another theatre, just to kind of learn the ropes. And I applied to drama school back in the UK. And back then it was a really prestigious drama school. And there were, I think, something like 1,000 female applicants and 8 places. And I got a place. So you'd think that would kind of spurred me on to believe in myself. But what happened was I ended up constantly thinking, am I good enough for this? Am I worthy of this? Was this a mistake? Was this a fluke? Like huge imposter syndrome. I can now see in hindsight, but at the time, you know, you're young and you just go through it, and found myself comparing myself to everyone. People that looked like me, people that didn't, people that were thinner than me, people that had better hair than me. And that, I guess, is where the comparison route as an actress really started. And then of course you have auditions and a part of being an actress, an actor, a successful one or a not successful one, is you will get rejection. You can't get every job. The numbers are not in your favor. But again, like drama school taught us how to audition, but they didn't teach us how to handle rejection. So I think, again, in hindsight, each rejection that I had, even though I was successful, I got great jobs, was kind of chipping away my self-esteem and my confidence bit by bit. And I hadn't even realized that this was happening. And back then, it wasn't a world where we spoke about how to love who you are, how to embrace who you are, how to kind of do things to take care of your mental health. And so for years, I guess my confidence had been chipping away and I hadn't really realized, even though I had a great acting career. So fast forward a few years, I met a boy, which is how most of these stories go. And at the time he was in the military, I was on an acting job touring Austria. He was with the military in Norway, so we weren't even in the UK. And I kind of felt like, oh, I feel like there's something more in me. Like, I love acting, but the instability of it is really hard. And I'd always enjoyed kind of working with children whenever they'd come to see a show or there was a backstage tour or something like that. And so I thought, you know, maybe I could be a drama teacher and impart like all this knowledge and love for the theatre and for acting that I have. So I did that and retrained, was a teacher for 5 years. And then my husband got posted abroad to Italy. So I decided to move with him. And at the time, that should have been like the happiest time in our lives because we just got married. I was pregnant with my first son. But unfortunately, when I got to Italy, several things had happened that were really public that made it appear, or I was made to feel like I was not worthy of him, that I wasn't good enough of him for him. And it was in a very public way. And like, he is the most wonderful human being. We are still in a very happy, loving marriage, but it was a very tough time. And at the peak of that, and that unworthiness, I ended up in hospital with a panic attack, with unable to breathe, with my son inside me, my tummy.
Gosh.
And spiraled. Yeah, it was really intense, and spiraled into anxiety, and real deep feelings of unworthiness, sadness, like, what's the point? Who am I? And it's all because the words and opinions of others that were completely unjust and from a place of, well, I'm not quite sure still to this day really where, why or where, you know, that happened to us. But I let that all sink in. And so at the time, obviously, I was pregnant and I didn't want to be poorly for my son when he was born. I wanted to be in a great space where I felt like energized and positive and excited to be his mum. And I didn't feel that at the time. And that's kind of where my journey of personal development and self-help, if you want to call it that, started. So I went to therapy. I read every book I could because I wanted to fix, in inverted commas, this situation. I wanted to feel joy. I wanted to find the moments in my life that were positive and enjoy this amazing time of being pregnant, newly married, living in Italy, which on the face of it looks amazing. So delved really deep into books, podcasts, surrounded myself with a community of women who championed me and helped me through this, navigate this very strange time that kind of took me by surprise completely. And I guess it was at that point that the teacher in me just thought, why is this stuff not taught in schools? If I had known and been taught how to handle rejection, how to like who I was and identify my strengths, how to not let the opinions of others penetrate you so deep that you take those words and those thoughts and that just unkindness to heart, I don't think I ever would have got to the point where I was in hospital with a panic attack. And so I kind of knew then, okay, there's something here. So when we returned to the UK, COVID happened, and I hate to bring it up, but there
it
is.
Yeah, I know.
And,
I know. We were talking about this before we started the show, isn't it? We don't like bringing it up, but it had such an impact, you know?
It did. And so when I returned, I was still teaching drama and directing, and my theatre kids were coming back like a shell of themselves. They were lacking in confidence. They didn't want to get on stage. And I thought, if my theatre kids are feeling like this, the, you know, in theory, confident ones with lots of self-esteem and I don't know, like just readiness to be who they are coming back not the same, then what's happening in schools? And so that was when I I just registered the name Small Steps, Big Vision, because I just thought, if I could just impart the daily practices that I still do today, and I did at my lowest of low times to help get myself out, if I could equip young people with these tools, with these strategies, with these daily practices, perhaps it could help somebody from feeling the way that I did, worthless, unwanted, like unimportant, irrelevant. Like if I could just give young people the foundation that I wish existed when I was a teenager, actually what could happen? And so I registered the name, I Googled, how do you start a business? And basically just ask anyone I knew who was running a business, like, what did you do? What accountant did you use? How did you do a website? Just asked. And then I guess like 2 years later, here we are, and it's embedded in schools. We're delivering. Oh yeah, go on.
Did you go on YouTube as well? About companies?
Yeah, I did it all.
Yeah.
Google, YouTube, like whatever I could, just to understand like what it meant. I didn't even know what it meant. And I guess there was huge imposter syndrome for me as well at that point, because I didn't see myself as an inverted commas businesswoman. I didn't know what that meant. I'd gone to Reese because I was like, oh, I'm going to have to buy a suit. Then felt like I was in fancy dress. So it was like, no, none of this is going to work. I have to be me. If I'm going to do this, I have to be me. And I guess like that's the way I've always led the business. And now we're like, this year we've delivered over 150 workshops to young women in schools in Devon, and hope for an even bigger impact next year. So yeah, it was definitely the right choice, but it just came from a series of nudges. And you know, I've done it all. I've done acting, I've done teaching, I've owned my own business. Like, you never know what's going to come and what opportunities are going to happen. And now I'm here on your amazing radio show. Like, you just never know. So absolutely, say yes to opportunities always.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know what, you come through as someone really, which is brilliant, really positive and like a go-getter. And so is this kind of very different to where you was before, basically?
Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like my confidence had been chipped away. Like, I guess like throughout, over time, little by little. And I'd always been a confident, bright, I guess, bubbly person, because I love people. I love to have fun. Like I've always been a glass half full type person. However, I was unrecognizable during that time of chaos, because I just lost every part of me. And although I think it's so hard to say, oh yeah, I'm so glad all that happened, and not wish it away and wish for an easier ride. Had that not happened, I probably wouldn't have delved into self-help, personal development, and I definitely wouldn't have the passion and the motivation for helping young people, young girls in particular, that I do today. So, you know, I try to practice gratitude daily, and although it was the toughest time in my life, and I at times I didn't know how I would come through that, and how we as a couple would come through that, I wouldn't wish it away, because I think it's given me this purpose.
I think it's fantastic. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, so I can offer several different things. So we can do a keynote talk if there's a specific like challenge, like, you know, social media comes up so often, and a healthy use of that. But also I offer a series of programs where you can kind of hire me and my team to come in and deliver several workshops over a series of weeks or months or terms, dependent on what suits the kind of the school program. And we start very much with self-love, self-worth, confidence, how to like who you are. Because for me, if you don't have a foundation of that, you're never going to believe that you're worthy of, say, going for this career or this job that people are telling you you can do, but you're not quite sure that actually you can do that. So we've got to have this baseline of self-worth, self-love, self-confidence, self-acceptance. And then we work with them on ways to return to joy when things get hard, because, you know, life isn't easy for any of us at times. You know, we have ups, we have downs, we have disappointments, we have challenges. And so all of what I teach on the well-being side is ways to help them return to joy. And then once kind of we built, if you decide to do a program with us, once we've built that foundation of self-worth, of well-being, of resilience, then we go on to talk about like breaking the bias of what is possible for women and how the world is changing for the better and how we can all be part of that change. And then finally kind of finish up with a personal pitch. So that they know that their voice matters. They know they have something to offer this world and hopefully are at a point where they can keep their eyes open for opportunity because they know that they are worthy of going for them.
Absolutely. And, you know, do you find that some things which the young find challenging, actually adults also actually find challenging as well? Because there's some things you kind of unfortunately don't completely solve even in high school or university, and you go on to take those with you. Do you know what I mean? Into adulthood. Do you find that?
Oh, absolutely. It's so funny because I was asked to give a talk at a female networking group called Six Degrees about a year ago now. And I spoke about my journey, my story from self-loathing to self-love. And what was so interesting was how many women actually said, you know, I feel that way. I felt that way. You know, I wish I had what you're offering the girls when I was younger. And to be honest, most people that I speak to about what I do, that is their first reaction. I wish I had this, because I feel like only now are we starting to really talk and delve deep into how to look after ourselves and mental health and mental resilience, you know. And so it's so interesting. And I just think, well, Bear Grylls came to a stand of mine once and he said, gosh, sounds like everybody needs a bit of what you're doing. And I thought, yeah, exactly. Like I think, and it doesn't change, you know, the themes of imposter syndrome when you get a new job. But here it is again. So you have to go back to those tools, those strategies that help you to overcome it. And then something else great might happen where, again, imposter syndrome rears its head again. So then you have to come back to those tools again. So I think, like, it's not that I'm not fixed, you know, like this is an ongoing journey for me. Like, I think we're always learning. We're learning about ourselves. We're learning about how we fit into the world. And so, yeah, it's very interesting to see the parallels between the young people that I work with and the really successful, savvy professional women that I get the opportunity to be around in the female networking group.
What are some of the most common issues that come out from when you meet young girls, you know, that kind of thing? And also, is it high school mainly? Or is it?
So, yeah, mostly like 11 to 18 generally is where kind of my work fits. Yeah. So yeah, it's really interesting. I think one of the biggest challenges that we all face and that always comes up is the fear or the worry of what other people think about you. And it's, for me, it's one of the saddest things, because obviously that is ultimately what led to my spiral. It's the judgment and the, I guess, the first impression thing of an audition and comparison against other people. But also, you know, when I was made to feel completely unworthy, it was the opinions of others that were so unjustified and so unfair. And had I not been somebody that was like, right, this is not me, I have to get better, who knows where I would be right now? Who knows if I would have a marriage? Who knows what kind of a mum I would be? And so for any young person that I work with, I always, always kind of labor the point that when you like who you are, the opinions of others become so much more, so much less relevant, you know, and actually they are none of our business, because whenever somebody makes a judgment or an opinion, it's because of the life circumstances that have happened to them. And it's often a reflection on them. It's actually got nothing to do with us, but it's just being projected onto us. And I think when you truly like who you are, or you, or at least can acknowledge the things that make you a good person, you know, the opinions of others become far less impactful. They'll always be there. But for me, it's if you're in a position where it's the opinions of others or the fear of what others think are stopping you from being who you want to be, having what you want to have, doing what you want to do, that's when it becomes a problem. Like, we all want people to like us ultimately, because when we were cavemen and women, they had to for survival. But it's about being able to control that.
100%. Do you, and what the common problem that you've mentioned actually is actually a general common problem, I think, for quite a lot of people, to be honest with you. It's not just isolated to, you know, you're young. I've known loads of people where I think people want to feel accepted. People want to feel, and that's fair enough. You know, people want to, I think everybody wants to be liked, and that's fair enough, and that's understandable. The reality is, though, that, you know, psychology is so complex. We're so varied in society that not everyone is going to like everyone. It's just unfortunately the way it's, isn't it, Emily? It's just the way isn't it? It's about accepting. It's about accepting that, look, not everybody's going to like me, but some people do like me, and I'm happy with that, and I can live with that, and that's fine. You know, and I think getting to that point is where, that's where some complexities happen. And as we know, I think in that age range, 11 to 18, there's also bullying. So it the hormones and because of generally the age, I think it's more exposed. It's more magnified in terms of, you know, that person really doesn't like me, or those group of people don't like me, and we all look, 11 to 18 is probably some of the worst years as well, unfortunately. it can be good and it can be bad. It's a mixed bag, isn't it? You know,
it really is. And also, like, you know, it's hard, that, like, coming to terms with not everyone will like you. That it really is a process in itself, isn't it? You know, you've really got to have some form of self-worth to understand that. And I think it's much easier once you find, like, a small group of people who really are your people, who champion you, who love you, who accept you, who are kind to you. I think during the adolescent years, and for some adults, they still haven't found it, that, you know, they're still trying to find where they fit in and figure out, oh, am I like that person? Or, oh gosh, that person just said something awful to me. Maybe they don't like me, you know, rather than spreading ourselves so thinly and having this amazing, huge group of friends that perhaps aren't friends. It's about finding that core group who do support you, love you, champion you, accept you, because that way you're surrounded by that. And that's what you're hearing. That's the feedback loop. That's what you're reminding yourself of, rather than people that you're unsure as to whether they really do like you and they really do have your interests at heart. And I guess during the teen years, that's why you're figuring that stuff out, like, but in just, like, I don't know, in a really intense bubble of school, you know, where you're trying to figure yourself out as well. 100%. And surrounding yourself with the right people is a game changer, isn't it? You know, and as soon as you try to, when you try to leave a group for something different, something more positive, you know, they're like crabs. They'll try and pull you back. So it's navigating that as well, and having the strength and self-worth to go, no, like, you are not healthy for me. These people are my people, and having the conviction to go.
100%. Absolutely. What do you think holds young people away from achieving their potential?
Well, I mean, I think there's several things. I think firstly, self-worth and a lack of it, a lack of belief in themselves that actually they are worthy and capable of achieving things. I also think you have to see something to believe it. So it to a certain degree. So if you don't see any women who are doing the thing that you want to do, it's very difficult to put yourself there as a teenage girl. And so it's about finding those role models to kind of guide you and lead you on this path of you can look, here's the evidence, you just have to do what I did, or you know, a variation of that. And I think again it goes back to the people that you surround yourselves with, because you are so full of self-doubt, I think, as a teenager. I certainly was. And I think if you are surrounding yourself with people who don't try, don't care, like self-sabotage, have negative self-talk, speak badly about people, you're very likely to fall into that trap because you're desperate to fit in. But if you surround yourself with people that go, you can do it, don't give up, you are really good at that thing, keep going, you know, that's going to be the tiny bit of belief, like it was for me and my drama teacher, that tiny bit of belief, that tiny bit of reassurance that gives you the confidence to keep going when it's hard, when you fail, when you fall short, when you look silly, and all those things. And I guess that's the final part of what I feel holds people back, not just young people, but holds people back, is this disproportionate fear of failure, fear of looking silly, fear of embarrassing themselves, fear of it being hard. And that is just caring what other people think. So it's all this huge cycle. As soon as we stop caring what other people think, that perceived failure, embarrassment doesn't become so big. And then you're willing to try new things. You're willing to get out of your comfort zone. You're willing to do things that scare you a little bit. And because then you raise your bar, and the things that were scary aren't so scary anymore. So you need to find a new scary and a new one and a new one. And then, you know, you are basically invincible.
Absolutely. I think it's like conditioning, isn't it? It's like, let's start at this really low level here, and then we'll start to progress. Because realistically in life, we have to step out of our comfort zone, isn't it, to go and move forward and achieve. I mean, like, you know, you became an actress. I mean, that's in itself sounds very complex. You know, you're in front of a camera, you're acting and being someone else in the script, and that takes a lot of development, you know. So just as an example, but so I think you're absolutely right. I think from a young age, if the young can start to do things where they come out of their comfort zone, they start to feel a bit uncomfortable, and they get used to doing that, because that's what will help for development. And that's not, and I say that referring to the young, because this is what the main theme of the show is about today. But it's also adults we're doing that. Do you know what I mean? they change their career business, or they do something completely different later on, and it's like a constant evolution of, you know, where we're going in life, you know. So, yeah.
And I think that is the way that it is now. Like, very few people do one career and that's it. They have a portfolio of careers, and that's fun, and it's exciting, and should be celebrated.
100%, you know. We're just going to another quick ad break, and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, Emily, let's talk about social media and comparisons, because the young are constantly on social media, and there's a lot of comparisons being made. I mean, what advice do you give to the young in that sense? Because I know it can, and it's not just for the young, this is for you know, adults can be affected as well. You know, when you go, yeah. I've heard it before, and I've actually spoken to people about this in some of my other shows, and the theme comes across, the subject comes across where people can feel a bit down from looking at, you know, Instagram or Facebook or whatever it might be, looking at making comparisons. Oh, that person has done so well. They're going so far. Look at me. I haven't achieved the same things. And I have no idea what youngsters are going through, because that must be a whole nother thing in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think you're right in saying there's a lot of adults that are challenged by social media and perhaps don't even realize it. Because I have a really difficult relationship with social media, because I love it and I loathe it. I love it because of the way that I use it. So I use it to connect. I use it to be inspired. I use it to find people who are doing what I want to do, so I can kind of share stories and ask advice and kind of add value and share my message in a way that I wouldn't be able to in person, because there's only one of me and the lovely Emma, who's on my team as well. You know, there's only two of us. So we can't have the reach that we want to have and the impact that we want to have without social media. But I guess the difference is my social media is a really positive place. Like, I follow people who make me feel good, who inspire me, who motivate me. And I would give this advice to any human being that uses social media, because even though we know the algorithms are so powerful, because I'm searching for things like the happy broadcast, so positive news stories, the algorithm is giving me more of that. So I'm in my nice, happy bubble of positive stories, you know, positive body image, all that good stuff. But for anybody that just wants searches for how to get a skinny waist or how to be on a 200 calorie diet or anything ludicrous like this, what's happening is that the algorithm is obviously just going, right, she likes that. So feed, 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 and giving more and more and more and more. And the vacuum then that all of us are exposed to, people could say I'm naive because I'm only looking at happy news, but this is how I keep my mental health in check, is by not watching the news on, you know, whatever news channel on repeat, or listening to it nonstop in the car. You know, it's by having that balance. And so I think for anybody, the advice is, like, really think about what you're searching for, because you are in a vacuum of your searches and the people that you follow. And so when I sometimes have like a little social media health check. So if I see something and it's made me feel bad, it's made me compare myself, it's made me think, oh no, do I need to look like that? Or, oh, you know, anything negative, they get either unfollowed if I don't know them, because then it's irrelevant, or they get muted if it's someone that I do know and I don't want them to, you know, feel bad because I've unfollowed them. Not that my ego is that big, but you know what I mean. If it's family, it's difficult. So you can mute them. And so they just don't come up. And so it's really about, for me, social media, like having a little health check and a little check in with yourself, like, what do I want this for? And when you post it, obviously with young people, like we always say, don't post anything without clothes on, you know, all that stuff, like, but it's hard, and it's a whole world that we're not open to. So I think in terms of young people and adults, you know, think about what you're searching for. Unfollow and unsubscribe to anything that makes you feel bad, and look for inspiration, look for value added, look for commonalities of hobbies or things that you're interested in and you want to learn about, because social media can be incredible for that stuff. And I was listening to a podcast just yesterday, actually, and there was some really good advice, because I've got two children, they're 4 and 6, but so they're not there yet, thank goodness. But the advice was, you know, when your children are starting to ask for a phone or access to social media, they really, really want that device. So they're more than likely willing to negotiate. So the negotiating tool that I'm definitely going to try, it might not work, I might be completely naive, but is no devices in bedrooms. So at least I have like that tiny bit of control, because I need to see how they're reacting with it. Like, then at least you can gauge what they're looking at. But also adding that rule to me and to my husband as well, because It's so bizarre. Even when we're asleep, our brains are expelling energy not to check your phone because your brain knows it's there, which to me is incomprehensible. You know, if when we're asleep, that's happening, think what's happening, like, you know, day to day. I definitely feel the pull of my phone. I'm not perfect. Like, I automatically sometimes you just open an app. You think, what am I doing? I don't even want this thing on, but it's designed to be addictive. So, you know, I think we've all got to live by these things. And if you do have teenagers, give them just, they love an experiment. So why don't we do an experiment in our house and see if we can all get a bit better sleep? So, you know, 9 p.m., all the phones, mine included, go in a box downstairs and we just see it for 2 weeks and then have a talk, like discuss it, talk about it rather than, I guess, instill rules without explaining what those rules are for.
100%. I've actually heard that from other people I've spoken to on the show as well, where at night they limit themselves. They've given them a time where they put the phone away, and it might be a message, that's different, but they put the phone away and, you know, social media is a bit of a no-no. I think 9 o'clock or, you know, 9 o'clock, some people 10 o'clock. Because you get people that, and I'm guilty of this as well, where after 10, you might be looking at, not all the time, but sometimes you're looking at social media and just find it, you know, just scrolling along, what's going on here and that kind of thing, you know. How can we all support young women to know that their voice matters and they matter?
Yeah, I think this is a really great question, because there's been so much in the media as of late, I suppose, with Andrew Tate, for example, and his view of women, and the way that he responds to any criticism, or and that is infiltrating schools. Like, I didn't think it would be, but it's the girls that I've been working with who've been saying, look, how do we deal with this? This is what the boys are talking about. They're seeing it, they're viewing it. So ultimately we need to listen to them. We need to, and it's so hard because as a parent, I am not good at this at all, but rather than offering advice, like, listen and ask the question, like, tell me more about that. How does that make you feel? What do you think is the way forward with that? And then can I share with you what I think, what I feel? And if they say yes, they've opened the doors for your advice. So, you know, I think that's one thing. And not just if you've got children, like if you've got a niece or a nephew or like a friend who's got children, it really does take a village to raise them. And they might not want to listen to their parents, but they might listen to, you know, cool Uncle Dave who rides a skateboard or whatever it is, you know. So they think about how you can support any young person that you come into contact with, really. So talk to them, listen to them, champion them, keep asking questions, and kind of be aware of, as much as you can, things in the media, because although it might be really difficult to talk about, actually it's better that they hear it from you than it is they talk about it with their friends and they get a wrong, you know, take on it, or they, you know, that it becomes more damaging because an awkward conversation hasn't been had. And also I think, like, modeling in the home is so powerful. There's so many simple things we could do. Like, we have such an unconscious bias about still the roles within the home. So I work, my husband works, but when I was on maternity, obviously I did a lot of the, like, school and child admin. And it took for me to say to my husband, like, now I've got my own business, I can't do it all. And I cried, and he was like, oh, I hadn't even thought. And it's not because, like, he didn't care about me, or he didn't want to be doing, like, household stuff and children's stuff. We just hadn't had that conversation. Like, I was covering it all so well because I wanted to be the good wife, that actually we missed out on that conversation. And since we have had the conversation, it's brilliant. Like, he's scheduled in his day now, days that he can do pickup when I'm working. And so I think if we can model, like, I have a son and a daughter. So for me, all of this is like, I'm always thinking and psychoanalyzing them. Not that they know yet, but and thinking about how I can show my daughter that, you know, both her and my son both do chores in the house. They both have opportunities to be an astronaut. They both have opportunities to be whatever it is that they want to be. And being mindful of, initially I would say, oh, be careful to my daughter, but not to my son. Like, but that's not because I'm sexist or, you know, whatever. It's just, that's ingrained. And so it's just learning and catching yourself. And when you're not perfect, that's okay, and finding ways to really I guess address feminist issues that are very real, and showing the way that we've moved forward, but also the challenges that we still face in an open and honest conversation. And I think my husband and I, we really try to just model a relationship of respect. Because I want my daughter to know and my son to know that daddy really respects mummy and mummy respects daddy. And this is the way that we talk to each other. Even if there's a disagreement, you know, we don't shout, we don't, we listen, we take time. And if we need a time out, we take a time out.
That's brilliant. Yeah, that makes absolute sense, you know. How can schools or organizations get your business Small Steps Big Vision to come in and work with their young women?
Yeah, great. So you can contact me directly at emily@smallstepsbigvision.com via email, or you can head over to our website, smallstepsbigvision.com, and you can do it there. Or you can come and find me on LinkedIn at Emily McGurk.
Have you had much feedback in terms of a lot of the work that you've done? Have you had some feedback from that?
Yeah, so it's really interesting because we're actually in the middle of an action research project. So there's a lot of data being kind of recorded into the impact of both raising confidence and raising aspirations in young women. So all of that is still kind of ongoing and being processed. But in terms of, like, on the ground day to day, Emma, my colleague, and myself are really noticing actually the challenge of trust. So the transformation, so far we've delivered 4 workshops to this specific group of cohort of 500. And the transformation from week one, where most, I would argue, couldn't really say something that they liked about themselves, which was really eye-opening, heartbreaking.
That's worrying, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think if you ask most grown-ups, what do you love about you? They probably would be like, oh, that was ever asked me before. And we've got that this weird British thing about us where, you know, we don't want to seem big-headed. We don't want to be blowing our own trumpet, all that stuff. So there's a lot going on there. But from that, like, over seeing people, seeing the girls over a series of different workshops, you know, and helping have really honest and frank and authentic conversations. Like, I start the session off with, I don't think you need this work right now. I'm hoping you never will, but I did. And I tell them my story, and I'm very honest with them, and it helps them to, I guess, know that it's okay. If they feel anxious, if they feel sad, it's okay. And there is always hope. There is always light. But you've got to know how to find it, and you've got to know how to get yourself there. So in terms of transformation, you know, we had a lot of young people who didn't really want to talk to us initially, to put themselves forward, to now, you know, presenting different things within the group, like actively supporting and cheering on each other. That was non-existent. But we try to create a culture of kindness, a culture of support, a culture of empowerment, where they know in that room it's safe to like who you are and to have dreams.
And to talk openly, I'm guessing. I'm sure the way you carry out the workshops makes people feel comfortable.
Yeah.
You, I mean, you seem very, very approachable. So I'm guessing that's the same kind of, that's what the youngsters feel when you carry out the sessions. So they're able to talk openly. Because I can imagine, well, being at that, you know, at that young age, it must be quite difficult, isn't it? Just to kind of just talk out like that in front of other people as well. It must be pretty daunting. You know, so I think it's brilliant that what you're saying and what you're doing in terms of making people feel comfortable to talk openly. And it might not happen on the first session. It might take a few sessions, but it's going in the right direction, basically, by the sound of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we see transformation kind of on the ground in terms of confidence and young people saying, oh, I use these strategies. I did this. I went to my joy list to help me feel good about myself when this horrible thing happened, you know. And so that's what's amazing, because you never know what's going to stick. Like, I read lots of different things, but I don't use all of them, because you have to find the ones that work for you. So it's just so interesting for me to see what is working. Like, what do they take away? What is that nugget that has helped them through a difficult situation?
100%. Emily, you've been fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. I don't know if you mentioned, you said a few things. I can't remember if you mentioned anything about social media, but is there any way, if, you know, you've got people that are listening, they want to talk more about what you do or some advice, etc. Are you on social media or anything like that?
Yeah, so for the grown-ups, I'm on LinkedIn as Emily McGurk, but I am on Instagram as Small Steps Big Vision, so you can contact me there.
Fantastic. Thank you for your time again. Much appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me on. It's been so nice.
Brilliant. And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.